Joseph M. Ashley, a doctor of rehabilitation and nationally recognized industry leader who is blind, brings a personal commitment and over 30 years of leadership in developing services and creating opportunities for individuals with disabilities to support their choice to live, work, and thrive in their communities.
Hello, and welcome to The Blind Experience with Dr. Joe Ashley. Are you an individual who is blind or has low vision and you're curious about what services, new information, activities, or other types of services might be available to improve your life experience? Or are you an individual who has a family member or a friend who is blind or has low vision and you're curious about what might be out there to help their life experience? With this new podcast series, we hope to create an opportunity for you to learn more about these services, resources, and whatever might be available to improve the blind experience. To accomplish this, we'll be discussing and examining resources, services, and issues related to the blind experience with individuals who are experts in the field and many of whom are blind or have low vision themselves. So whether you're an individual who is blind and having some issues or just curious, or an individual who is going through a diagnosis at this time, or dealing with the issues of a degenerative eye disease, or otherwise just curious about the blind experience, hopefully you will find something in these discussions that will benefit you. I'll be bringing my perspective as an individual who was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa while in college and lost vision gradually until the age of 40, where I became totally blind. The podcast will use this personal frame of reference to examine the blind experience, providing information that will enhance the ability of individuals who are blind and vision impaired to live, work, and thrive in their communities. So let's get started. Welcome back to The Blind Experience with Dr. Joe Ashley. And I'm here today with Sam Yale of the American Council of the Blind, the Virginia Chapter President. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on the show, Dr. Ashley. I'm delighted to be here.
I'm so glad you were able to join us. I was hoping you could give our listeners sort of an explanation of the American Council for the Blind in Virginia, what it does, and the kinds of services it provides to its members.
Certainly. So the American Council of the Blind is a consumer advocacy organization. We strive to increase the security, independence, opportunity, and quality of life for the blind and visually impaired. And the ACB of Virginia is the state affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. And so we seek to improve the quality of life for residents of the Commonwealth. And so we work on various advocacy issues. That includes issues around gaining meaningful employment, any types of discrimination issues, access to healthcare and healthcare devices, improving educational opportunities for the blind, visually impaired, access to technology, websites, equipment, appliances, any type of advocacy issues that you can think of that impact the blind and visually impaired community. And in addition to the advocacy piece, we also have a very strong community. We do a lot of networking and mentoring. As part of the pandemic, there was a set of community calls that grew out of that. And this was a way for members and non-members to really stay connected while everybody was isolated, and to share information, to network, to meet each other, and to really build a sense of community. And those community calls have been extremely popular, and they've really taken off. We now have several community calls every day, and we've gained a lot of new members from those calls. And the ACB of Virginia even started providing community calls as well, and that allowed our members to get together and discuss various topics of interest. So
in addition to providing some basic services during the pandemic, you guys came up with a strategy to help people feel connected even though they were isolated, and then provide some peer support, it sounds like.
We really did, and I think that it was very helpful and beneficial for many people in the blind community to share information and to help each other and to really feel connected to each other.
I think that connection would have been particularly important during the pandemic. That's excellent what you all were doing. It sounds like it's a lot of positive strategies about helping support people to live, work, and thrive in their communities. And that's so there's an opportunity here for people if they wish to find some way to be connected, it sounds like. One of the things that I noticed in reading your bio is that you have a tremendous interest in audio-described movies. And when I checked on the ACB, American Council on the Blind website, it seems they have a lot of information on that. Could you sort of talk to us a little bit about what the audio-described opportunities are for people who are vision impaired and how that can enhance their lifestyle?
Sure. Well, let's first start by talking about what audio description is, because not as many people are familiar with audio descriptions. There are many more people who are familiar with closed captions, because closed captions have been around for a long time and they're almost everywhere. So most people know that what closed captions do is they will take the audio portion of a video program and they will print an equivalent for the audio on the screen. So dialogue, music, sound effects, that type of stuff will be shown on the screen for somebody who is unable to hear the audio portion of the movie. So audio description, you can kind of think of as the reverse of that. Audio description is intended for people who are blind or visually impaired, who are unable to see what's happening on the screen. And so the purpose is to describe what's known as the key visual elements of a program. And so any type of visual information about the program that's communicated, such as gestures, facial expressions, actions, of course, any type of significant information that's part of the visual portion of the video program, audio description will attempt to communicate that verbally. And the way they do that is there's a second audio track which contains the audio portion of the video, and they will insert in between the silences in the audio, in between the dialogue and other important audio information, they will insert a verbal description of what's happening on the screen. And so it really is an art form, because you have to note all the gaps in the audio on the program. You have to time how long those gaps are, and then you have to write descriptions that will fill in those gaps, which will succinctly and artfully and informatively describe any important information that's being shown visually on the screen.
You know, it's an interesting process that you're describing, because I think the phrase art form really does capture it, because it's hard to use those small gaps to convey the information. My wife and I have been able to find several movies or series that we watch where we can get the audio description. And one of the things I noted, or that she has noted, is that it helps her, and she's cited, to be able to understand what's going on the screen better, because it directs her attention to things she might have missed.
You know, it's interesting that you say that, because people are starting to realize the benefits that accessibility solutions provide for people who may not have disabilities. So, for example, captions are very useful in noisy environments such as gyms and bars where you can't hear the audio. And mm-hmm. So people who can hear are starting to realize that. And now that people are just slowly starting to discover audio description, thanks to it being more prominent in on services such as Netflix and Prime Video and Hulu and even on television, now that sighted people are starting to discover audio description, they're realizing that, number one, there could be things happening on the screen that they missed, especially mm-hmm. on a very busy visual program, a program that's busy visually, such as maybe a cartoon like The Simpsons, where there are a lot of sight gags that happen really quickly. And so it's very easy to miss visual information that's presented on the screen. But the other benefit of that is that you don't have to be looking at the screen if you have audio description on. And so some sighted people are discovering that it's really like reading an audiobook. You know, if you think about how talking books were invented to help people with print disabilities to read, and how audiobooks have really taken off in companies like Audible, where people who can read print are listening to audiobooks in the car while they work out. And so they're doing similar things with audio description. Now they can be in the kitchen cooking, or they can be folding laundry or doing something where they're not able to look at the screen at the same time, and they can still enjoy the program with the audio description.
Well, that's an excellent point. So it really can have a lot of versatility around a household for everybody in the household, not just the person who's visually impaired.
Certainly.
I hadn't thought about that before. The website that ACB maintains, I think it's got a subdivision on there where they have some information. Could you tell us where that folks can find more information and what they would find if they go to that website?
Certainly. So the American Council of the Blind has a project called the Audio Description Project, and that is an offshoot, I believe, of the Audio Description Committee. But the purpose of the project is to collect information about audio description, what is available, where it's available, how you access it, and what types of audio description is provided. So audio description has been used. It's been around since about the 1980s, and it primarily started out on television, and it also has been used for live events such as theater, in museums, even on tours such as at the National Park Service. Some of the parks in the National Park Service offer some audio described tours, and it's now even showing up on streaming services such as Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, and HBO Max. And the ACB has had some involvement through litigation and other channels to get some of these streaming services to include audio description. Now, one problem that you can run into with audio description is because it's not as ubiquitous as captioning, that the platform that you are obtaining a program on may not carry the audio description. So a good example of that, if a show airs with audio description on television, maybe the rerun is not available with audio description if it's shown on a different network. So if you watch, you know, Blue Bloods on CBS and it has the audio description, and then you catch the rerun on, you know, ION TV or some other network that's not required to carry the audio description, they may not include the track. And this is true for other platforms as well. So, you know, movies that may include an audio description track, maybe it's available on iTunes, but it's not available on Prime Video or vice versa. And so what the Audio Description Project really attempts to do is collect all of the titles that have audio description and allow you to look up what services carry that track, so that if you want to rent a particular movie or even purchase it, you know that, you know, the track is available on the DVD or it's not available on the DVD, and it's available on iTunes or it's not available on Netflix. And so this gives you a way to know where you can find the audio description for a particular program.
That sounds like some pretty good information. I had no idea that they could be audio described in one platform and not on the other. That would explain some of the frustration, I guess, that I have felt looking for the audio described.
Yeah, and it's because it's not regulated. It's certainly not regulated for the streaming services. So it really is up to them. It's voluntary, and so you know, to get something that's audio described, you really have to know who has gone to the effort to get that track. They have to get the audio description track from the studio, or they have to create it themselves. Now, one interesting thing that Netflix has done is they have gone back and audio described some shows that did not air on television with audio description. So shows like Breaking Bad and Mad Men and Better Call Saul, which aired on AMC, which was not required to offer audio description. Netflix has gone back and described those. So you can go back and watch those shows described with audio description on Netflix.
Well, that's fascinating, too. My wife's a big NCIS fan, and we have found the audio described, and I think it goes back to, I forgot which seasons where it starts, but it really does, for me, make that show a lot more interesting.
Certainly, because you can hear a gunshot, but then you're left with the question of, well, who shot who, and where did they get shot, and what happened to the person after the bullet entered them, so...
Yeah, it also helps me. They identify character names, so you can follow people a little easier with that. Certainly. When otherwise I would not have known which person was talking, or and so some of the voices are very similar.
Let me give the web address for Audio Description Project, so that people know how to find this information. If you go to ACB's website, it's acb.org, and then if you add /ADP, that's Alpha Delta Papa Audio Description Project, acb.org/ADP. That is the homepage for the Audio Description Project, and it has a wealth of information, as I mentioned, such as what titles are available with audio description, where you can find it, and also how to access it, because there are so many platforms out there now, especially with all the streaming platforms, and there are televisions. The FCC passed a law that as of December 2016, all televisions manufactured in the United States or sold to the United States have to include screen reading features that talk. And so now you have smart TVs that can show Netflix and Prime Video and Hulu, and you have the sticks, and you have the Apple TVs, and of course television and DVD, and your phones and your tablets and your computer. So many different ways to access audio description, and so they have information about which providers offer it, you know, how to access it through your different cable companies, their set-top boxes, which also have to talk as well, and how to access it through the different TVs, mobile devices, and tablets as well.
Okay. Well, that's great information, and I really do appreciate your sharing that with our listeners, because I think they will be able to take advantage of some of these new audio described opportunities. But I think the resource that's on the website there is going to be huge for people to better understand where they can find what the programs are looking for, and whether it will be audio described.
Yeah, I use it all the time, whether I'm trying to look up to find out if a title is audio described, or even just to find out what is airing on television with audio description. They have a schedule of that up there. So anytime you want to know what's being described, that's where I go to look it up.
Okay. Sam, I wanted to talk a little bit about leisure pursuits and leisure activities, and I know you have a very interesting one. So could you tell our listeners a little bit about how you got into and what dragon boat racing is?
Certainly. I'm on a team called the Out of Sight Dragons, and we are a team of blind and visually impaired paddlers in the Metro Washington, D.C. area. And so let me first start by talking about what dragon boating is. Dragon boating is a sport that was started centuries ago in the China, Hong Kong region. And a dragon boat is essentially a very long boat. During the races, the boats are decorated with a dragon head on the front, but they essentially consist of 10 rows of seats. And so you have a person on each side in each row. So that would be two paddlers per row. So up to about 20 paddlers in a boat. In the front of the boat, there's a drummer. And in the back of the boat, there's a steerer. Now, the steerer has a very long oar that they use to direct and guide the boat. And the drummer, each team has a drummer during the races. And the purpose of the drummer is to keep all of the paddlers in sync. So when you hear the drum, that means your paddle should be going in the water. And the theory is that if everybody is paddling at the same time in the same direction, that you're going to be able to move that boat very far, very fast. And so we hold these races, or we compete in these various races against other teams. And the races can be 250 meters, or they can be 500 meters, or they could even be 2,000 meters. And so we race against other teams. There are usually about four teams in a race. And then as you win a race, you advance and you compete against other winning teams.
So you are competing against people that basically are just the general public who are interested in dragon boat racing. They're not other teams that have visual disability folks on there.
That is true. So when we enter these races, we often race in the local area. We enter races in D.C. or we have traveled down to Richmond. There's quite a big club down in the Richmond area for dragon boating, and we've traveled up to Baltimore, and you know, people compete all over the country and all over the world. They enter these races, and national and international races as well. And so you can be racing against all different types of teams I've seen a number of breast cancer survivor teams. There's even been a team of deaf paddlers. And so, you know, often we are the only team of blind and visually impaired paddlers in a race. We did have one team of blind visually impaired travelers that traveled, I believe, from Oregon to race against us in a race. So there certainly are other teams of blind and visually impaired paddlers, and I think it's actually very popular up in Canada. But you could be racing against all different types of teams with of different ages and athletic abilities, and it is very a very diverse sport.
It's sort of like leveling the playing field. You're in there just competing. It's not sort of a specialized disability event. That's pretty cool.
That is true.
Wow. And I'm assuming the gentleman or the woman on the oar in the back is a sighted person?
Yes, the steer is sighted, and they do have to be certified to steer the boat, because they have, you know, they're responsible for making sure that 20 or so people, you know, get from one point to another.
And do you just find the smallest person you can to be the drummer on this?
Whoever's able to do it, but it certainly works out better if the person is of smaller stature, because they are sitting in the front. And if you're paddling pretty hard, it can get very wild and rocky, and that person can fall off their seat. So it is better to have a smaller person up there.
Well, that sounds like a very enjoyable way to spend an afternoon. Well, Sam, thank you for coming on and telling us about a very interesting and, it sounds, challenging sport of dragon racing and your work with your team. So, Sam, once again, thank you for coming on this show.
It's been great to be back. Thanks for having me again.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening in today on The Blind Experience with Dr. Joe Ashley. I hope you found some information that was useful to you, and we look forward to having you back again for the next episode.